Welcome to another episode of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We got the gang back together. I'm Randy Haynes, joined by Colin Weatherwax and our long-lost friend Mike DiRoto. What's happening, man?
It feels good to be back. I feel very lost without you guys, and now I feel like I'm back at home again.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've gotten together. The off-season, Mike's got some new things going on that he's going to talk about. And football is finally over, so we're going to get back in the swing of things, doing this more regularly here. Team previews are done. We want to thank the listeners for listening to all those, the team previews as well as the prospect minutes. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from those. We really appreciate you guys listening. We wish we had more news to talk about today. Right off the top, the Marlins making big moves. Neil Walker, Curtis Granderson, Colin. How high up your draft board did Neil Walker and
I mean, instead of undrafted, maybe like the last round, Curtis Granderson, he'll probably start the year off there in Miami, wind up on a postseason roster somewhere. It just seems like he keeps doing that year in and year out. But for now, he's projected to bat leadoff for the Miami Marlins. And of course, JT Realmuto still on the team. So the top three look okay for now, but these guys are end of the bench guys for your fantasy teams this year.
Let me piggyback off that, Colin. I was looking at the roster too, and with Realmuto there, it looks kind of like decent. When Realmuto's gone, it's going to look even worse. But imagine being like a Tigers fan or an Orioles fan and having a worse lineup than the one that we're looking at here.
Hey now. The Marlins went out, they added a couple of veteran guys. You know, I have to look at the contracts. They're not guaranteed to make the roster, but unless they completely crater or get injured, these guys are going to make the roster. Walker's kind of interesting if he gets everyday playing time and isn't terrible like he was last year with the Yankees, because he's got multi-position eligibility, first, second, third in most formats. So that could help you out in deep leagues or in draft and holds. You know, Granderson's going to be a fan favorite as long as he's playing, but there's no real fantasy value there. We don't have a lot to talk about. Unfortunately, with what's going on in Major League Baseball, the big signings aren't coming in. One that is kind of interesting that happened yesterday, though, or could potentially be interesting, somebody that we talked about on this podcast a lot last offseason as a potential sleeper closer, which I think all three of us ended up with multiple shares. Brad Boxberger goes to the Royals. It's a one-year deal. There's some incentives there. He wasn't named the closer, but between him or Willie Peralta, it's probably going to be one of the two. I lean Boxberger. Where are you guys at on the Royals closer situation?
For me, Boxberger, like you said, Randy, last year we were all in on getting him at the end of the draft. And of course he performed in the first half. He was able to get those, 20 to 30 saves that we were looking for. Coming into this year, playing for the Royals, it's not going to be as lucrative. I could see probably about 20 saves through the whole year, which is still, it's decent. And it's also a guy that could, give you those saves that you need at the beginning of the year, and then you can either dump them and pick up the next streaming closer or something like that. But as long as he has a job, he should be able to get those saves for you. And going to the Royals, I think that's a pretty good spot for him.
Yeah, I think this was probably the best case scenario for him, because he doesn't have an Archie Bradley breathing down his neck here. He has Willie Peralta. The rest of the bullpen's pretty shitty. Kevin McCarthy, Tim Hill, Brian Flynn, these are all no-name guys. The thing with him, and he did good for us in the first half of last year, for all three of us. The second half, he fell off. But his home runs per nine was at like a 1.5, which is absurd. So if he stops giving up homers, he might be able to put in a decent year.
Yeah, and he's going to be in a nice ballpark. In Boxberger, yeah, he fell apart in the second half. He lost the job. I believe he lost the job late August, early September. But with where he was going in drafts, and especially if you drafted early and were able to pick him up in Fab, yeah, he returned a major profit for the first 4 months of the season. He got you the saves that you were looking for. And I think we're going to be looking at that with him again this season. We need the saves, and Boxberger's decent enough that he should be able to hold the job.
I think you could do a lot worse than Boxberger.
Yeah. And the one thing with Peralta is they did give him a guarantee, an extension, like a little mini extension, guaranteed his contract for this season. I'd wait to see what the announcement is. One of these guys is going to go for nothing, especially now that there's two of them. You might even, if you're in a draft and hold, I would still maybe throw a dart at Willy Peralta in the last round or two just in case, because I do think Boxberger could easily, as long as he's performing well, could easily get flipped during the season. The Royals are going to be terrible, you know, but that's something to keep in mind if you are taking him. That's kind of the new, like the real news for today. We've got some kind of hypothetical news that we're going to get to. But first, let's move into our TGFBI leagues that we already mentioned. Mike, let's start off with you. What league are you in this year?
So I'm in League 11 with names like Paul Martin, Tim Heaney, Benjamin Pernick, Scott Pianowski. There's a couple other big names. Joe Pisapia is in there. There's a couple other guys in there. So it's definitely going to be a good time. Last year I was in League 6, which some people were saying was League of Death. I was the one with like Spore and a couple other guys. And I finished in the middle of the pack. And I'll discuss, I guess we're going to get to our strategies in a minute. But I'm definitely looking forward to doing it again this year.
Yeah, Colin, what about you? What league are you in?
I'm in League 2. So if you don't know about the TGFBI this year, League 1 is the Champions League, where every league winner is in League 1. And then I feel like League 2 should be like 1A, because the guys that I'm going up against, guys like B. Dentrick on Twitter, The Fantasy Fix, Dalton Del Don, Greg Sauce, Jeff Erickson, Matt Thompson over at FWFB, Seth over at Fantrax, that this league is just completely stacked. It's going to be difficult this year. Last year, I was able to jump in with Ben at FWFB and co-own a team with him. So this year will be my first only me team. So I'll get to do my strategy this year, but it's going to be difficult for sure.
Yeah, and you'll actually have some experience because you played in the main event last year, right? You didn't win, though.
Yeah, I actually did dabble in the NFBC last year. I mean, if you don't follow me on Twitter, then you obviously don't know that I did win the main event. I'm going to say it every single podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a different format this year. I love the NFBC. Their website is great. Their draft site is great. And
you say you won the main event. People probably think that you won the whole entire $500,000 thing. That's what people probably think.
No, if I won the $500,000, then I wouldn't be sitting here with you two schmucks.
Oh man, it's gonna get deep this year. We need somebody needs to take Colin down. Really win a big time league this year. Just so.
Oh man,
it still won't shut him up, but we can at least have something to come back at him with. Yeah, moving over, you know, nothing against the guys at Fantrax. You know, that was a great site for last year. They gave Justin a lot of flexibility when he was setting things up. But for this type of league, NFBC is just, it's perfect. The one thing that's going to be different this year is you're going to have your Friday hitter replacements, which is standard across NFBC. It does switch back. I'm 99% sure we're switching to standard two catcher league, which is what NFBC's default is for 15 team. One DH compared to last year where it was two DH slots and just a one catcher league. I'm in League 5. I'm with Mike, your good friend Anthony Aniano, Brad Johnson from FanGraphs, Brett Sayer from Baseball Prospectus, Patrick Davitt, a bunch of other really good guys that are, you know, all these leagues are tough. They're industry leagues. Some may, on paper, look, you know, a little more tough than others with the names, but all these guys are in the industry, really good players. Some of them, even if they're not big in terms of writing or podcasting, they're playing in high-stakes leagues. So it's going to be big time this year. 21 leagues for TGFBI this year. Justin did a great job of putting all this together.
I think it's pretty cool. Like when you go on Twitter and you go to follow all these guys and some of them in their bios have like finished 146th in the TGFBI list.
it's a big,
this thing got pretty big that people are actually doing that.
Yeah. It didn't double in size, but it's damn close. I mean, there was, I think 13 or 14 leagues last year, so we're up. You know, we're adding 21 leagues this year. It's going to be fun. I think it's just going to keep growing. The one thing that I'd like to have changed next year is Justin got my Twitter handle wrong in the initial. Our group chat was blown up. It's like all TGFBI, you know, TGFBI leagues are announced, and I'm like, oh, where's my email? So I go to Twitter. I'm like, I know I signed up, and then it's partly my fault for having too many of the same number in my Twitter. You know, we talked to Justin. I am in there. It's kind of funny. The guy that was actually tagged in place of me has never tweeted and doesn't follow anyone and followers before yesterday. So TGFBI really really just hooked this guy up. So shout out to him. So let's talk about a little bit of strategy. Mike, what did you do right last year? What did you do wrong? And what are you going to change this year?
I did a lot of wrong. I didn't add Mondesi later in the year, which killed me in NFBC and in here. I thought I had the best pitching staff in the entire NFBC, which it turned out to be pretty decent. I had Syndergaard, I had Paxton. I can't remember who my other starting pitcher was. I don't know if you guys remember off the top of your head, but my starting pitcher was very good, but like the same mistake I made in NFBC.
Did you have Clev? Did you have Mike Clevinger? I think you had him everywhere.
Did I have him everywhere? Yeah.
You can pull up your team from last year if you go back in your history on Fantrax, but
yeah, that's what I just did.
Yeah, I already have mine pulled up because I was prepared. But it's fine. you're a little rusty. It's been a while.
Yeah, we'll give Mike a break.
I'll do that as we speak. But the one problem I encountered in NFBC and in TGFBI was the fact that I didn't draft enough starting pitching. And even though my ratios are so good towards the end of the year, I was so far behind in Ks and wins that I had to pick up pretty much the leftovers towards the end of the year when we got into the last couple months. And that was counterproductive because then my ERA shot up and it was just a whole disaster. And that's why I finished in the middle of the pack. But I'm not going to make the same mistake again this year.
Colin, what about you?
So me and Ben, we drafted from the two hole last year, which was probably one of the worst spots to draft from, being that Jose Altuve was pretty much penciled in at that spot. So that's who we went with. We started off our draft with three Houston guys, so Altuve, Springer, and Verlander. Verlander obviously turned out to be the best of the three. But one of the things that we did wrong, obviously starting off with Altuve, he had a really down year. Our fifth round pick was Tommy Pham, didn't turn it on until later on in the year. And then our SP2 was Jose Berríos. So there was a pretty steep decline from there. And then the rest of our pitching staff didn't really form the way that we had planned it to. We missed out on a few fab guys. We had Dansby Swanson as our starting shortstop at the end of the year. So that's another issue that we had. So coming into this year, I really think I'm going to start focusing more on the pitching. There's a lot of guys that I like deeper, not at the top of the draft, but right in the middle, that I feel like I can create my whole pitching staff. And Randy, you know who the guys I'm talking about. I think I have them on pretty much all of my drafting holds. And then I just renewed a dynasty league and I'm like, oh, look, there's the three guys I'm drafting everywhere. So I really think I'm going to have a deeper pitching staff and then focus more on the hitting up top.
Yeah, for me, it was I was in League 11. I ended up finishing, I ended up finishing 11th, but it was pretty packed in tight. That was only 8 points behind sixth place, only eight standings points. So it was pretty jumbled. I had a much better pitching staff than I did hitting wise. Home runs really was what killed me. I ended up scratching, clawing my way up to 13th in home runs, but I was last in home runs pretty much from the jump. I did good in season. I was able to pick up Zach Wheeler and Max Muncy kind of before they got expensive.
Wow, those are great ads.
Yeah, which were two of the big ads during the season. But where I really just kind of blew it was the first handful of rounds of my draft. I mean, I took Nolan Arenado fourth overall, which was nothing wrong with that. But when you see Mookie Betts went right behind me, it's like, oh, I love Arenado. He definitely earned the value, but Mookie could have made a little bit of a difference. You know, Colin, you know where I'm going. Second round pick. I took D. Gordon thinking I can not have to worry about speed the rest of the way. That was just a colossal mistake. My boy Jonathan Scope in the fourth round, again, just kill me now. That was another pick that just really screwed me. But then throughout the draft, I hit on some guys. I got Garrett Cole in the sixth round. Took some chances on like Bradley Zimmer, Gregory Polanco. They didn't really work out for me. I was able to hit on Corey Dickerson late in the draft. So I think something that I need to do this year is really – is try to focus more on getting some power. I think I went in last year thinking that power was free to have everywhere, and that was true in a way considering I picked up Muncy. But since there is more power out there, that kind of means you also need to draft more power if there are more home runs being hit. So learn the lesson the hard way there. We'll not take D. Gordon in the second round again this year. Doesn't mean I won't draft him. He's going outside the top 100 right now, I think, in the recent draft. So maybe I'll dip my toes back in the water there. But I won't be taking either Alberto Mondesi in the second round, third round either. I'm going to stay away from that, get some more stable commodities. You know, and the other thing that, like I said, with the Fab this year is I even though I was able to hit on Muncy and Wheeler, I do think I still need to be more aggressive, especially earlier in the year. Because if you're able to hit on a guy earlier, you get him in the first month, month and a half, you've got 4.5, 5 months of stats that you're getting. You know, the big one was missing out on Juan Soto. I don't have that in front of me, but I remember missing out on Soto by like $7 or $8. And I believe the person that ended up with Soto ended up winning our league. So that was a huge difference there. And that swung a lot of the leagues as well. Does switching to two catcher change your draft strategy at all? I mean, not that two catcher is anything crazy, but it does. It is different from the format from last year. What about you, Mike?
Real quick, Luis Severino was the other pitcher. I had Syndergaard, Severino.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I took Elvis Andrews in the fourth round. I remember Colin said that was a bad
thing. Yeah.
Another, I just had a terrible draft. I took Andrews, Buster Posey, Andrew McCutcheon, Adam Jones were my first four hitters.
Oh, wow.
Sad. And then they had Gregory Polanco and Trey Mancini and Evan Longoria and Logan Morrison. Wow. That is horrible. Logan Morrison, Evan Longoria, Mancini, Polanco, Jones, McCutcheon, Posey, Andrews. That's like just a bunch of old guys that I thought were.
Colin, why did we ask Mike to come back again after here? Come back on.
picking out of the first spot is not ideal. I hate picking out of the first spot. I know you get Trout and everything, but just there's so many good players that go back to back at the end of the rounds. Like Charlie Blackmon and Freddie Freeman went to Kenyatta Store in his first two picks. Compare that to what I'm picking here with freaking Elvis Andrews and whatever.
No one made you take Andrews. Just saying, no one made you take him.
He made me take him. Elvis Andrews made me take him because I thought the power would translate, and it didn't. And he didn't steal any bases either, so he ended up just having. And he got hurt. He missed the 6 weeks or whatever he missed. So whatever, I'll make up for it this year. I promise you that.
The two catchers.
Two catchers. Even though I'm a little more comfortable with it because it is NFBC. I'm not a huge fan of it. Last year, I remember having I thought I had a pretty good tandem. I had Wilson Ramos, and then I platooned Kurt Suzuki and Tyler Flowers there. So I knew at least one of those two were going to get a couple starts a week. But it is very difficult with two catchers because if you go for it, you're lessening value in other positions, and if you don't go for it, you're essentially punting it, and the team that usually wins your league will have a good catcher number two, so it's very tough to find the happy medium with that.
Yeah, Colin, what about you? Is it changing anything for you this year going into drafts?
No, I think I'll just do what I did last year. I'll go into my main event league like I did last year and just perform my strategy perfectly. I was actually trying to look at the history. It's a little bit harder to look at the history on the NFBC.
You don't have your roster tattooed on your forearm.
I really should. No, that's actually a good idea. I'm not doing anything today. I might just do that. I remember during the year, there was Kurt Suzuki. He was cut from a team, and I was able to pick him up off of Fab, I think, for like a dollar or two. And even though he was splitting time between Tyler Flowers, the catcher number two position, you know you're going to get a guy like a Kurt Suzuki, a guy that's a backup or only plays 3 or 4 times a week. But sometimes that can be the difference between, you know, a prospect that you're holding on to or a guy that gets one plate appearance or four plate appearances a week. And that's just something that you have to keep in mind whenever you're drafting this type of format. Yes, it's nice to have a deep team, but you also have to keep in mind that you have to field those two catchers. It's a 15-team league. That means every single starting catcher should be owned, and even more than that. I mean, there's guys on the bench that are owned as well. So it's a different strategy for sure. I always like to get like a stud as my first one. I won't overdraft a catcher like Gary Sanchez last year, but getting a guy like Yadier Molina, who I believe was one of my catchers last year. So he missed a little bit of time in the season, but, you know, being able to put Kurt Suzuki in whenever he was out, to have Suzuki be my catcher number two. I also picked up Williams Astudillo at the end of the year. So just having that balance, getting the guaranteed plate appearances is something you're looking for in a two catcher league.
Colin, yeah. You bring up Astudillo. Sorry, Randy.
Go ahead.
Say before I forget, you bring up Astudillo, and I'm looking at the catcher ADPs now since January 1st on NFBC, and he's the 13th catcher going off the board here. And this is a guy who hasn't been promised playing time, might even start the year in the minors. I think Twitter and the industry is hyping him up. Even though he doesn't strike out, he doesn't walk either. So he's a very interesting baseball player. Would you be comfortable with him as your catcher number one in a 15-team league?
No. No, not in a 15-team league. I think, like you said, the helium on him is a little bit too high. I think before they signed Nelson Cruz, he was looking to possibly play DH and also fill in at third base or catcher. There's always the chance that he fills in at third base because of Miguel Sano being there. But as my catcher number one, like I said, I want to get that guaranteed playing time. So, I mean, I'll probably pay up a little bit, get a guy like Mike Zunino, Wellington Castillo, as long as I can form my team around them a little bit more since they'll tank my average a little bit. But I think that's a little rich to pick Astudillo as my first one.
Yeah, Astudillo going that high is just it's insane. I understand, you know, baseball Twitter loves him. He's fun, you know, cool story. But it's just, I don't – they have Jason Castro, who they have real money committed to. And Mitch Garver is still a decent catcher, younger guy. He's been on their prospect radar in that organization for the last few years. He's a much better defensive catcher than Astudillo. So there's no – I just – it blows my mind when people take Astudillo there. I see the path where he plays a couple days a week in different spots. With the batting average, he ends up returning some value and being maybe even a top 15 to 18 catcher. But you're already paying that price for a guy that you might cut before the season even starts.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're, I don't understand that at all. You know, but in terms of having to be a two-catcher league, I'm never somebody that likes to take one of the first catchers. I like Danny Jansen, but now his draft price is really starting to creep up, which is fair. I mean, he's up to the ninth catcher in draft since the first of the year. But besides that, there's some guys later in the draft that I like. You know, JT Realmuto is probably going to get moved, which would take away some of the buzz I like on Jorge Alfaro, Tucker Barnhart, maybe even Austin, depending on if he goes to the
Dodgers. Tucker Barnhart, so, I mean, it's a cheap option.
Yeah, it's going to be rough if Realmuto ends up taking one of their jobs, because unless Alfaro would go in the return for Realmuto, there's nobody in Miami that's going to spot and end up being decent. So, but there's still some guys that you can get later. I even like Garver, you know, a little bit. Cervelli, Tyler Flowers, Garver. I think Carson Kelly could maybe be decent if he breaks camp with the club. So John Hicks is interesting as somebody that has catcher eligibility, but could probably play a little bit at first in DH and also catch. So it doesn't change my strategy a lot. And I actually think even though catcher is on the whole is kind of a wasteland, there's still, if you avoid the landmines, you know, Wellington Castillo is nice. I still think you can get some guys, you know, later in your draft and not have to pay up a lot. So before we move on, is there anything about TGFBI this year that you guys want to talk about?
No, I don't got much left other than that I really want to win it so I could put it in my bio. Like Colin has his main event winner in his bio.
Yeah, we can. So
I,
we can
I think just the same thing.
Yeah, I really want to win it just to be able to hold it over Colin. And every tweet that I put out there, I'm going to throw in there that I won this league. Yeah, tweet.
It's not a bad idea.
So what we're going to move on to next is kind of like, it's a little bit of hypothetical news. Like I said, unfortunately, we're starting to ramp up the podcast, but there isn't a lot to talk about. So we're getting creative. And in the last couple of days, there's been news that the Major League Baseball may implement a universal DH rule as soon as the season. You know, we're not going to touch too much on whether they should or shouldn't, what's the better way to play baseball in terms of having the NL. I think it's a little weird that they're going to implement it coming into 2019 when teams have been National League teams have been operating all off season with not having a DH, but that's a separate topic. If it were to get implemented this year, I've got some names written down and I want to know if there was a universal DH, how much would they jump up for you guys? The first one's kind of obvious. We'll go to St. Louis. Jose Martinez, where does he jump up or how high does he jump up for you? I'll start with Mike.
I'm going to look up his ADP now. You don't have it next to you, do you?
Yeah, it's 207.
207. All right. Jose Martinez is obviously a very talented hitter, and getting him in a lineup every day would definitely boost his value. I think that's the only issue with him is that no one knows if he's going to be in a lineup every day. It's not looking like it as of now. But some of these guys in front of him, I think if there was a DH, I'd have him over Carlos Santana. I'd take him over Luke Voit. Yuli Gurriel, they're kind of the same value for me. I'd rather have him over a guy like Eric Hosmer, Miguel Cabrera, Ian Desmond, if you don't need the stolen bases. So I think that 20 spot he's in now could shoot up to around 13 or 14. So I think it would definitely benefit a guy like Jose Martinez.
Yeah, I agree. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I think so as well. Just getting those guaranteed playing appearances. I mean, we've seen, you know, what he can do with the bat. He's really bad defensively, and that's why they made the trade to get Paul Goldschmidt. They saw that the defense was a killer for them, and he cannot play the outfield as well. So if they get the DH, I would probably go out of my way to put him on a couple teams as well. There's a guy going six picks ahead of him. I'm sure he's probably the next guy on your list, and Kyle Schwarber. That would be an interesting conversation for me just based off of team construction. If I want to sell out for power, if I want to make sure I can get average and plus a little bit of power, that would be an interesting debate for me. But yeah, I think right now in his current situation, it's hard to draft him. But I think, you know, if he gets traded or if they implement this rule, he'll skyrocket up the draft boards, especially in NFBC.
Especially the fact that he would be hitting behind Goldschmidt and Ozuna. So if you could put him in that lineup behind those two guys, the RBI opportunities will definitely be there.
Yeah, I didn't have Schwarber on the list just because he's kind of already guaranteed the majority of playing time. The guys that I'm going to name, they don't have a set place to play. You can easily see where they would have everyday playing time, but it's somebody that I think their value would boost if the DH were to come in. Martinez, he's the big winner. If this were to happen, he would be the big winner because he should be a DH anyway. There's been talk all season about him maybe going to Tampa. You know, maybe there's another American League team that would get him because he shouldn't own a glove. You know, he needs to just, you know, worry about raking and helping his fantasy owners. And the next one that's interesting, and this is somebody that I thought of, that if this was announced before the offseason started that the DH was coming in, maybe he doesn't get traded. Maybe he does because the Dodgers were trying to get under the luxury tax. Anyway, Matt Kemp in Cincinnati, somebody that should probably be a DH anyway. His defense is gradually gotten worse as his career has gone along. If the DH was implemented, where does Matt Kemp jump up for you? He's currently, since the start of the year, he's going at about pick 323. Where does that do for you, Mike?
So Kemp's a guy, he's kind of similar to the guys I was naming before, and the reason I did so bad in the FBC was because I took the guys like Andrews and Jones, who have always been good, and then they kind of screwed me last year. But Kemp's a guy, I think he's always been good. He's always hit wherever he's went, outside of like one or two seasons, and that was wow. And I love Kemp with his new team. I'm in that lineup with Puig. I'm looking now, he's behind guys like Cedric Mullins, Adam Jones, Kiki Hernandez. Come on, who's drafting Kiki Hernandez over Matt Kemp if Matt Kemp could DH every day, you know?
Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I think I agree with Mike. I probably won't go out of my way and draft an older guy in like the second round like Mike. But, you know, if he were to get in this lineup every day, you just look at the top of the lineup. You got Peraza, Jeanette, Votto, Suarez, and then you throw in either Matt Kemp or Yasiel Puig and then Kemp. Like, that's a pretty stacked top of the lineup.
They have one of the best lineups in all of baseball. I honestly believe that.
Yeah, I believe that too. Just their pitching. So that's probably why they won't be able to compete this
year.
Got
better.
Their offense is something. And if you're able to throw in Kemp every day as a DH, you don't have to worry about him being in the outfield. He's a guy that could creep up the draft boards. But like I said, I probably won't go out of my way and draft him in the second round like Mike will.
Yeah, Mike, I gotta come back to something you said real quick. Does adding Tanner Roark to any rotation actually say it got better?
That's not why it got better. It got better because I got Sonny Gray, Alex Wood. That's why it got better, not because of the Tanner Roark, but Tanner Roark did show flashes a couple of years ago. I'm not gonna lie.
This is coming from the guy that loves Discofani.
I do like Discofani. Yeah, his job is safe. I mean, I somebody that lives in, I live in Baltimore, but I get the Nats are on TV here every night, and so I saw a lot more Tanner Roark starts than I ever wanted to see. And that guy is
2016, Tanner Roark threw 210 innings with a 2.8 ERA. So it's somewhere in him. I don't know where, but
it's not going to come out pitching half of his games in that park. For you. And the skills have definitely started eroding over the last few years. So I just had to, Tanner Roark's just, that's a hot button topic with me. Never been a When he went to the Reds, I'm like, what are they doing? If they need an innings eater, they've got Sal Romano there. I mean, he'd be big, the same thing. You know. Anyway, that's just a little tangent I went on. Sorry. The next one is actually two guys for the same team, and it actually, depending on if they sign Bryce Harper or not, this could maybe go away. But Nick Williams and Roman Quinn, two very different players, but are both in draft since the start of the year. Pick 422 for Quinn, 427 for Williams. If the DH were to come in, this would put Quinn in the outfield. They'd probably DH Williams most of the time and really get both of them playing time. If it were to come in again, which one do you like more, and do both jump up for you, Mike, Quinn, and Williams?
I was a Nick Williams believer at one point. I still think if he got the at-bats, he could do something with it. I mean, he obviously has the power. He's almost hit 20 home runs in the last year. He almost hit 20 home runs, and that was in 400 at-bats. So if he could be an everyday DH or get his bat into lineup every day, you're looking at over 20 home runs. The average, I would like to creep up a little bit. I think it's at like 260 now. So if he could get that up, I think he'd definitely have some value. Quinn's value is every day in the outfield. I think it would help him. I don't know if I would go after him, but I think he would definitely be a dark horse to keep on your radar if he was to get every day at bats as well.
Colin, what about you?
Yeah, these are two guys that are basically going, you know, at pick 500 in these drafts. And, you know, coming out of spring training, as long as they don't make a big signing, like you said, Bryce Harper, one of these guys is going to get the job. And with injuries, the next guy up would be the other guy. So whenever you're filling out your roster, you're looking for upside, especially in NFBC and also in just your regular draft. So if you're telling me I can get a starting outfielder for a major league team that's looking to compete, and Nick Williams or Roman Quinn, then yeah, I'm gonna go out of my way at pick 500 and pick either one or both of them. I think as far as upside, if you're looking for power, Nick Williams is the guy. More of an all-around bat would be Roman Quinn. He flashed a little bit last year. Doesn't have the prospect pedigree like Nick Williams did, but I like both guys. And like you said, if they implement the DH, both of them will have value, and you're basically getting them for nothing right now.
Yeah, for me, if this were to happen, Quinn is the big winner. He's somebody that skills-wise I like a little bit anyway. And with the state of speed, you know, Steamer has him projected as basically a part-time player, projected him for 338 plate appearances, and still has him down for 19 steals for a projection basis. So if he were to get everyday playing time, you know, and this is somebody with whether the National League adopts the DH or not, if he ends up getting everyday playing time somehow, this is a huge asset potentially steal-wise going super late in drafts right now. And like I said, I don't think we're going to know, you know, if he gets the starting job over Nick Williams until, you know, real late in spring training. So he's somebody I like taking a stab at now. This could easily be if he plays in 140 games and gets close to 500 plate appearances, the average might suffer a little bit playing that much, but the speed's going to be there and it's going to be cheap. I don't see if he were to get that kind of playing time, how he doesn't steal at least 30 bases, maybe even more. And if he starts, you know, kind of running a little hot with the bat, or maybe can increase the walk rate, the runs could be there too, because maybe he gets bumped up higher in the lineup, or if there's another injury, you know, to maybe like Cesar Hernandez or Odubel, he's their kind of their leadoff or number two hitter by default. So Quinn's somebody that's going late in drafts that I'm a really big fan of. You know, if the DH were to come in, this would be huge for both of those guys. But Quinn's the one I would bump way up. Williams, you know, late game power guy, not a bad option if you were to get everyday playing time. But Quinn's the one for me. Let's move into Atlanta. Somebody that's, you know, kind of a little bit forgotten man. As the season's gone along, I was kind of forgot that he was even in Atlanta. And that's Adam Duvall. Somebody that may still, even if they were to implement the DH, he'd be a short side platoon guy with that anyway. But we've seen good seasons from him in the past in Cincinnati. The power is still there, and he's going at pick 495 right now in Draft Champions League since the start of the year. Does Adam Duvall excite you if he were to end up with everyday playing time, Mike?
Yeah, he's a guy that hit 30 homers in 2016 and 30 homers in 2017. He had almost 103 RBIs and 99 RBIs. So he obviously has fantasy value. I don't care if you hit 240 or 245 or 250. If you're going 30, 100 every day, back-to-back years, you definitely are intriguing. And now add him in a lineup where you got Donaldson, Inciarte, Freeman, Acuna, Ozzy Albies. I think his value will definitely skyrocket if he could get at bats every day.
Yeah, Colin, what about you?
Yeah, Duvall's burned me from last year. I was big on him coming into last year just because, like you said, Mike, coming off of 230 home run seasons, almost 100 RBIs. Yeah, the average is pretty bad, but, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to get some cheap power here at the end of the draft. But last year, 15 home runs below the Mendoza line is the average. I think if he got everyday playing time or if they implemented the DH, I think Atlanta would be smart to go out and sign someone more consistent than an Adam Duvall. But if he were to be the guy, he would be a guy, you know, late in the draft so you could get for power. I'd probably dip back in the well again just because I'm a sucker for punishment. But, yeah, the power would play in that park and the lineup, like you said, ahead of him would be great for RBI opportunities.
Yeah, Duvall, he'd still be interesting. Of all the guys that we're going to talk about, he'd probably be between him or Williams. I think they'd probably be my least favorite, but it would definitely put him back on radars. And he's somebody that's been around long enough that the any kind of flash is gone. So, the, you know, we know old guys get bumped down in the redraft league. So he's somebody that would be – he's interesting also if something were to happen to any of those outfielders. I do think he would get a good bit of playing time. So let's move on to Milwaukee. And this is somebody that I think is starting to be forgotten about kind of really if you think of when he busted onto the scene 2 years ago. And that's Eric Thames. You know, he's kind of getting pushed out of the way because they have to pay Ryan Braun. They have Yelich, they have Kane. You know, Jesus Aguilar came onto the scene last year, so Thames has pretty much been reduced to a part-time player. But again, if he were to have, you know, 450 plate appearances coming his way because of, as a result of the DH, I think he would shoot up upwards. Mike, what do you think?
I think I take a couple at bat, even if they did have a DH. They want to get those guys into the lineup every now and then. But with Thames, the 30 homers 2 years ago, like you said, burst onto the scene. But he just strikes out way too much. His K rate last year was 34.9%, which is absurd. You compare that with a 2.9. You pair that with a 2.19 average. Nobody wants that kind of baseball player, especially on their fantasy team. The year before that his K rate was almost 30% again, and his average was 2.47. So he's low average, high Ks. If he hits you 30 homers, is it worth it? I think you can find better guys out there to hit you 30 homers with better average and a better approach.
Yeah, that's all very good points. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, he's a guy probably would end up last on this list just because I think Milwaukee's going for it this year. If Eric Thames does what he did last year or, you know, he strikes out too much like Mike said, there's a guy in the minor leagues that I'm taking in pretty much all of my draft and holds in Kesson Hiura. He has a position at second base, but like you said, Hernan Perez could play there. And if they could DH Hiura just coming up from the minors, I think that's probably the best way to ease him into, you know, the situation. But he's a guy that I'd probably go over Eric Thames for sure. And they're drafted right around the same range as well.
Yeah, that's a good call there, but from both Perez. I mean, he's going to move around the infield a good bit as it is. And in the outfield, he's eligible basically everywhere except catcher. So maybe he's actually the one that would benefit the most if there was that extra playing time. It might be Braun that could slid into DH and Perez becomes an everyday player. So that's a good call. The last team that I want to go to, and for them, I wrote down everyone if a DH were to be added, and that's the San Diego Padres. They have too many guys as it is. They're also rumored to maybe be in on Manny. Maybe they're in on Bryce. You know, Will Myers isn't going to play third base for them this year. They already said he's moving back to the outfield. They got to make a trade here, you know, kind of regardless of whether they end up adopting the DH or not, and especially if they sign Manny. Who do you – this is kind of more of a question, who would get the playing time if there was a DH, but who do you like the most out of this Padres outfield with Will Myers, Hunter Renfro, Framil Reyes, Manuel Margot, and Franchi Cordero has been, I feel like, forgotten, but he was a pretty trendy name this time last year and once the season started. Out of those guys, who do you like, you know, in general, and then with their current draft price, who are you a fan of?
I think all these guys are actually getting a lot of love in the industry. I think I see a Franmil Reyes tweet like every day. Somebody's tweeting about him and his power. If he get the opportunity, Myers going at 111 overall. Not a huge fan of that ADP. Renfro going at 175. Not a huge fan of his ADP either. You said Franchi Cordero. I remember when he got called up last year. Everybody was all over him. His ADP is currently 362. And who was the last guy? Margot
and Franmil Reyes.
Margot and Reyes.
Five of these guys are being drafted in every league right now.
Yeah, they really are. Out of all those guys, I guess Margot has the most upside, because if you remember going into last year, everybody thought he was going to be a 2020 guy. Didn't turn out like that, but he ended up going 8 homers, 11 stolen bases, hitting 245. But I think the ceiling with him, fantasy-wise, might be the best out of those guys.
Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I think you left off the best potential DH off their roster, which would be Francisco Mejia. And in NFBC, you get him in the catcher slot. And, you know, we've seen his defense at behind the plate, and he's definitely not a great defensive catcher. So if they got the DH implemented, I think you'd see Mejia a lot more. But as far as the outfield goes, you know, Margot definitely has the best upside, especially for fantasy, a guy that can give you 20-20. Push about 280 average at his peak. So he's a guy that I'll probably end up as my fourth outfielder if I can. But a guy like Will Myers, I can't get behind that price of 111 ADP. I don't know where he's going to play, and I don't know how long he's going to play. So those two factors make it to where I'm looking elsewhere if they implement the DH. And then, like you said, if they sign one or both of the two main free agents out there, it's going to really muddy the waters for the rest of the guys.
Yeah, in general, I don't, you know, over the last several years, I don't remember a situation like this where you have five, and especially if Myers isn't going to play third base, none of these other guys can play third base. You've got five guys essentially for three spots. You know, the DH would obviously, that would help things. And like you mentioned, that was a good call with Mejia. He'd probably get some run there as well. But there's a good chance that Cordero has to start the year in the minors if they can't trade Myers or trade Renfro. You know, Margot to me is the one, him and Cordero are the ones that can play center field. So Margot to me is, other than Myers, is probably the safest in terms of the guaranteed playing time. Both have injury history, though, performance issues, being inconsistent. I don't understand really Hunter Renfro going at, you know, in draft champions league since the start of the year, he's going pick 174. I don't get that, because it could easily be a situation where Franmil Reyes ends up, you know, knocking him out of a job, or maybe he ends up in a platoon with Cordero if Cordero has a nice spring. So I think, you know, it's just a really interesting conversation that all five of these guys are getting drafted in every league, and there's only room for three of them. You know, even if there was a trade, that would open up things, but I still think you would maybe get a Cordero Reyes platoon or a Cordero Renfro platoon. So that, you know, the Padres of any team are probably really pushing hard to bring the DH in, you know, but all five of these guys are also interesting in their own right. We've seen Myers have 30-20 seasons before. Renfro and Reyes are nice power sources. Maybe there's a little bit of batting average boost with Reyes over Renfro. Margot's somebody that's – he's killed me the last couple of years. I'm still a believer. I still think that there's a potential all-star caliber player in there somewhere. And I'm not the biggest Franchi Cordero guy, but I do, you know, I do see the potential there. I do see the tools. So the Padres need to make a trade or two. You know, the Indians need one of these guys. You know,
they're all young.
Yeah,
they're all
young guys. Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, Myers feels like he's been around forever, but he, you know, but he's still relatively young. So I, you know, the Padres are going to be an interesting outfield to watch. You know, as spring goes along, and maybe they make a trade. So again, you know, this was a way to talk about some players with not a lot of news going on. Maybe some guys that are off the radar that, you know, the listeners can stash in some drafting holds, or maybe just kind of use it as a way to revisit them. These are guys that don't have jobs right now, because easily. There is a rule change in the league, or just with an injury or a trade or whatnot. So, yeah, before we get going here, Mike, why don't you real quick plug some of your new ventures that you're working on?
So I'm doing a podcast over at RotoBaller with Anthony Aniano, who has a RotoBaller show already, and one of my best friends, Dan McDermott. You can follow him at Danny Baseball. It's BAS3BALL. And other than that, I got a new article coming out for Pitcher List tomorrow regarding pitch tunneling, which nobody really seems to be too interested in except for me. I don't know if it's like too maybe the most not the most interesting topic to some people, but I'm all for it. And I think it's a good way to gauge how good pitchers actually are and how good they're going to be eventually when you see a guy like Shane Bieber, who's only 23 years old, who has almost perfected the concept of pitch tunneling. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. And anything else I'm working on, I'll let you guys know. Follow me at Mike the RotoCop on Twitter.
Yeah, the pitch tunneling thing is interesting. It's something I don't really know too much about yet. I'm going to read your article when it comes out. That's something everybody should go check out. Mike also wrote up Josh James, a week or so ago as well?
Being a top 50 starting pitcher. And Nick Pollock at Pitcher List released his top 60 today. And I was happy to see Josh James was 43 on his list. So If you're thinking like Nick Pollock, you're thinking right. That's for sure.
Yeah, and go over to pitcherlist.com if you're not already. I don't know what you're doing, but I know they redid the site. I saw that the other day. Those guys are all great over there. We've done podcasts with Nick. I know Alex Fast was on the show with Justin here recently, so they're all good guys over there. Check out their work. Colin, real quick, what do you have going on besides bragging about your leagues?
No, that's usually it. That's all I'm here for. no, but I'll definitely go check out Mike's article. Once he said Shane Bieber, I'm all in. Yeah, that I'm going in all my drafts. He's one of the three pitchers that I've ended up in pretty much all my teams. But yeah, we look forward to doing this podcast once a week. We're going to get that started weekly. Hopefully we'll have, you know, some mock drafts that we can go by before we get to TGFBI, which starts in a couple weeks. I know me and Randy and probably Mike as well, we've already done some draft and holds. So we kind of have seen the prices. We'll get to see, you know, whenever Bryce Harper or Manny Machado signs, we'll be here to give you that story as well. But as of now, just go out there, keep doing your early drafts, because seeing these ADPs with Manny Machado at pick 14, with Bryce Harper at pick 18, those are not going to be there after they sign. So if you compare them with one of your top first round picks, that's something that I'm doing as well. You can follow me on Twitter at CWeatherWax13.
And you can follow me on Twitter at RTH222. You're going to be hearing a lot more of us as draft season rolls along. Mike, whenever you're around, come back on. You know, it's always welcome. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a good baseball season.